A tweak to CMS regulation, a new FDA guidance, legislation that has wound its way through Congress and has been signed into law. These actions all can reshape and reconfigure the contours of U.S. healthcare. How it's delivered, who delivers it, where it's delivered, the cost, the price, and who foots the bill. On Managed Healthcare Executives, DC Roundtable podcast series, editors will be talking to policymakers, advocates, health officials, and lawmakers in Washington about what's new, interesting, and important in healthcare. We'll be looking for insight, updates, and through lines that will inform and give you, the listener, a better understanding of the state of play in U.S. healthcare politics and policy. Listen in, learn a lot. In this episode of DC Roundtable Podcast, Managing Editor Peter Werwein spoke with Paul Kelly of Capital Advocacy and Government Affairs on his background and current lobbying efforts. As a second-generation lobbyist, Kelly started on K Street with the American Chiropractic Association. He shared insights on PBM legislation, noting its challenges in the Senate despite House support. He also discussed healthcare's role in the upcoming presidential election, predicting continued ACA support and efforts to lower drug costs if Biden is reelected.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Peter Werwein, and I am managing editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. And today we're conducting another interview for our ongoing podcast, the DC Roundtable. We are interested in talking to people in DC about healthcare policy and politics. So much of healthcare is determined by what happens inside the Beltway. So this is our journey inside. And today we have Paul Kelly. He is a lobbyist. The name of the firm is Capital. His firm is Capital Advocacy. So thanks for the time today, Paul.
Delighted. Thank you.
So maybe we could just start by you giving us a little bit of background about yourself and who you're working for these days.
Sure. First, Peter, I want to thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to talking about these issues, and I really have enjoyed your publication over the years, so credit to you for doing great work. But as far as I go, I've worked here in Washington since the mid-1980s, so that's getting to be a long time now. Early in my career, during college and graduate school, I worked in sort of low-level administrative-type positions on Capitol Hill. I wasn't making any, really important decisions, but that was enough for me to realize that, I'm interested in work in politics and policy and government affairs. As it turns out, actually, my father was a lobbyist here in Washington. So, sitting around the dinner table as a kid, we talked a lot about policy and stuff, and it always seemed interesting to me. So, but my first lobbying job was with a group called the American Chiropractic Association. And I always like to say that, the poor chiropractors, they are important to a lot of people. But they don't get a whole lot of respect in organized medicine or health policy circles. So I learned some really important lessons about being persistent, about being creative, about how important local issues and the opinions of local voters are to members of Congress and policymakers in Washington. And we worked with them, and we had some success. We were able to improve their standing in the Medicare program, which they had been trying to improve for 20 years.
So you've been present at the creation of, some of the most important pieces of healthcare policy and legislation in the last few decades, Part D and the ACA. It's almost hard to imagine a time when there wasn't Medicare drug coverage. It's just sort of, you forget,
Yeah.
interesting how history creates a different, you sort of forget how contingent sometimes these things are.
It's hard to believe that wasn't covered from the get-go, but it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to the growing prominence of pharmaceuticals in healthcare.
That's true.
So, to bring us sort of to into 2023 and 24, we have been following the pharmacy benefit management legislation pretty closely at Managed Healthcare Executive. As you know, there was a bill that passed the House last year, and there's several bills in the Senate. And this is an area of keen interest by almost all parties in healthcare. So I'm just curious where you see things going with the PBM legislation in Washington.
Yeah, that's a really good question, and by good I mean we could have a long conversation about it. And I'll start by saying that all the way back 20 years ago, at the beginning of the conversation about Medicare drug benefit, creating a Medicare drug benefit, and like I said, I was with the Drugstore Association. We were sounding the alarm about PBMs and some of the problems that might exist, particularly for drugstores and for folks who came and relied on their drugstores for services. But at the time, we had a very difficult time breaking through because we had a Republican Congress and we had a Republican in the White House that was George W. Bush. And they've had a good argument. They kind of said, "Hey, this is what the private sector uses, so why shouldn't we use it in a government-supported program?" And so ultimately, we couldn't really fight back against the structure that's a PBM-reliant program. And it's just interesting to me as a student of politics and government that sometimes these issues take a long time to mature. And what you're seeing now, Peter, is definitely 20 years later, you're seeing people in Congress have finally started taking note of the fact that there are some problems with this particular system. Now, that doesn't mean that this is going to pass and become law. And you're absolutely right. The House of Representatives passed a bill called the and I'm looking at my notes because I always get the name wrong. The Lower Cost, More Transparency Act. So it included several provisions on PBM related PBM reform, I guess we'd call them. It requires some reporting requirements that the PBMs have to give certain information to employers, the plan sponsors who are their clients. It's kind of surprising that the client wouldn't require that information to begin with, but I guess they haven't been. It bans spread pricing in the Medicaid program, and the PBMs have to disclose the compensation to their plan sponsors. So these three provisions are the primary PBM provisions in the House passed bill. The Senate committees, there's two committees of jurisdiction over on the Senate side, the what's called the Finance Committee. And the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, shorthand that to HELP Committee. That's Bernie Sanders' committee. And so those two committees have passed legislation too that would reform the PBM industry, require a lot of this disclosure of information, make some reforms around rebates, requiring a lot of the rebate funding to pass through to the plan rather than stopping with the PBM, and would address spread pricing in Medicaid as well. So all this is to say, you're absolutely right. There's been a lot of attention to this. There are a lot of committees involved. Lots of members of Congress agree that we ought to do something about some of these PBM practices. But there are also, I'll say, there are also people in Congress who still believe that PBMs offer some value. And as you probably know, in the United States Senate, we still have a filibuster. And basically, that means that any single senator or a small group of senators can stop most anything from moving forward if it doesn't get unanimous consent from all 100 senators to move it forward. So you still find people in the Senate, folks like Senator Mike Lee of Utah, folks like Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who kind of think that, hey, PBMs are a market-based reform, from 20, 30 years ago, that actually, do some good in the system. So maybe we shouldn't be so hasty to move forward with these major reforms. And you even have people on the other side of the aisle. I know Sheldon Whitehouse, who's a Democrat from Rhode Island. He's on the Finance Committee. When they passed the Finance Committee legislation that I was just talking about, he said, hey, let's, okay, we should do some stuff about PBMs, but let's not take our eye off the ball, which is the pharmaceutical manufacturers and pharma. And, they're really responsible for high drug prices, and we shouldn't try to, skin this cat just by doing PBM reform. So, even though there looks to be a lot of consensus, and there is, more than there ever has been on reforming PBMs, I think there are enough people in the Senate, frankly, who might prevent it wholesale reform from moving forward. Now, what I will say is the parts of PBM reform legislation that save money will probably be used as a pay for. As you probably know, when Congress in the healthcare area, whenever they want to pass something to, let's say, extend telehealth, which they want to do at the end of the year, they want to find a way to pay for it. Anything that costs money, they're going to look for a pay for or a cost offset. And there are provisions of PBM reform that will save money. And so I would not be surprised if at the end of the year, part of a year-end healthcare package, probably after the election, might include some type of PBM reform. And specifically, I will let you know that both the Ways and Means, well, the Ways and Means Committee in the House of Representatives passed a two-year extension of the telehealth authorities in Medicare. They passed that last week. Section 302 of the bill they passed would actually reform, include some PBM reforms and save some money. And that's how they pay for the extension of the telehealth provisions that they want to extend for 2 years. So
That's fascinating.
it's all kind of related.
It's fascinating that two very disparate things, PBMs and telehealth, get yoked together as a, I guess this all comes under the head, this all gets sort of scored by CBO, and that can determine the fate of any legislation, correct?
CBO is absolutely critical. And yeah.
So is your sense maybe that we'll see some, just to sort of sum up, that we might see some fairly mild PBM legislation passed after the sound and fury of the November election, and that it would be yoked in some way, perhaps, to the extension of the telehealth waivers, the public health emergency waivers that really have allowed telehealth to sort of take off and insinuate itself into American healthcare.
I think at this point, any healthcare legislation, most folks think that anything health related is going to happen after the election. And it's liable to be part of a larger budget bill, which kind of takes care, as Congress has done over the last several years. They'll basically wrap up all of their spending legislation, otherwise known as the appropriations bills, into a year-end package, and then that will be a must-pass piece of legislation because they want to keep the government open, and that's why members like to attach certain things to it. And there's been an awful lot of talk this year and committee activity, as I described. Ways and Means passed a telehealth bill last week. Energy and Commerce passed one in the House this week. So they're all putting their stake in the ground saying, yeah, we want to extend these telehealth authorities, which are so popular in the Medicare program, but we got to find a way to pay for it. So, as I said, that's probably going to be where they do something on PBMs, the parts of PBM reform that save money. Now, there will be plenty of people in Congress who say we need to do more on PBMs to reform them wholesale. But also, like I said, I think there's enough resistance, particularly in the Senate, where you might find people saying, let's be more cautious about this. We can do some reform. And so they'll come to agreement on where they can use PBM reform as a pay for. I think that's my prediction. And on predictions, I once heard a politician say, if you're going to predict, predict a lot because that enhances the odds that you'll be right at least once.
Throw it all at the wall and something sticks. So let's pivot to sort of politics. Of course we have this we have this election coming up. You might have heard about it. And we have our candidates. Healthcare has figured into politics. There was a lot of discussion of Medicare for All among the Democrats for 4 years ago. And as we know, Biden didn't go there. He talked more about strengthening the ACA. But do you have a sense of where healthcare might land as a as an issue in the election? It seems like immigration, maybe the war in the Middle East, the Israel Hamas conflict, cultural issues may drown out healthcare. But what's your sense?
Yeah, I think you're right, and I think that was an excellent appraisal of where things stand right now. Healthcare, I mean, economic issues are always the top issue that voters care about, and beyond that, issues matter a lot less than general personality and likability of the candidate, and neither one of these candidates are especially likable or popular. But healthcare generally has favored the Democrats over the years, and I don't see that really changing much. I mean, that's much more their bailiwick and their wheelhouse. They were the leaders on creating Medicare. They were the leaders. They've always been the leaders on national health insurance, and the Affordable Care Act, of course, was Barack Obama pressing for that before that. Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton pressed very hard for a national health insurance program. So that's sort of always been a strength of theirs, and less so for the Republicans. So I don't see that calculus changing much. And you're absolutely right. As it relates to the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, I mean, I don't remember, I lost count of how many times the Republicans tried to repeal that when they were controlling Congress, but they failed each time. And, I think when they started, the Affordable Care Act was still pretty much in its infancy. But now we're like 13 or 14 years on. That legislation has been in place. There are more people, covered. Whether you agree with how they're getting that coverage or not, or not, kind of depends probably on where you sit politically. I mean, a lot of that coverage is through, the Medicaid program, a public insurance program, taxpayer funded. Although there have been some gains in the marketplaces, and so that's private insurance. So that kind of takes a little bit of wind out of the sails of any Republicans or pro free market people who might say that's the way we got to get coverage. So it's very popular. There are other provisions which are very popular. I think I told you before, I got two kids who are under the age of 26, so they're still on my health care insurance. So I think that's great. There's non-discrimination against pre-existing conditions now that didn't exist before. So that's good for everybody. There's, no cost sharing on certain preventative healthcare services. There's a lot of stuff in here in that law, which is, very popular. So it's, I think the Republicans have made the calculation that, there's really there's no political appetite for them to try to get rid of ACA. So it's pretty much taken off of the playing field as an issue. And you're right. The other issues, cultural issues, immigration, economic issues, those will be the ones that play the most in this election.
One sort of healthcare issue that might get some attention or work on the campaign trail would be drug prices, right? And the Inflation Reduction Act. I don't think most Americans know what the Inflation Reduction Act is, but they might have heard of insulin caps and they might have heard of Medicare negotiating prices for the first time, which is, if you're in this part of the world, that's very much a BFD, right? So, do you see perhaps the and Trump has talked about driving a better bargain, importation. He's talked about it plays into some of his America First ideas of other countries freeloading. Americans do pay higher drug prices than any other country in the world by far. So, do you think maybe drug prices might surface as an issue, both parties trying to, and both candidates trying to use it to their advantage?
Yeah, it's I kind of see that as a jump ball, really, because when Trump was president, you're right, he did. He supported reimportation. Typically Republicans did not. He supported driving a harder bargain with the manufacturers for Medicare. He'd make the point that you heard Democrats make for years. Hey, we're the Medicare's the biggest purchaser of drugs. Why shouldn't they have negotiating power? So, he gave a lot of cover to Republicans to start to say, hey, we're for lower drug prices too. And, they do kind of draw the line on price controls. I think, there's a subtle difference between negotiation giving the government some negotiating power and outright price controls, which you see on insulin, as you indicated. I mean, the Inflation Reduction Act not only gave CMS and Medicare the ability to negotiate on drug prices, but it also capped insulin prices at $35 a month. And moving forward, I mean, Biden supports extending that to commercial insurance, not just Medicare. Everybody ought to be paying $35 a month for insulin. That's part of the budget that Biden submitted to Congress back in March, I guess it was. So that, he's on record. That's what he wants to do. And at this point, I think, they passed the Inflation Reduction Act. It had a provision in there to allow for Medicare negotiation on drug prices. They're moving forward. The first 10 drugs have been identified and negotiations are underway. I guess they'll do another 15 next year and then 15 after that. I can't remember the exact provisions, but it's something like that. And so that's being implemented. And I think Biden's point is going to be, look, bring me back, reelect me, and I'll continue the progress on those negotiations. And I'll push hard for $35 cap on insulin for everybody, not just folks in Medicare. But Trump is, he's been real quiet on a lot of things related to healthcare. He's really good at rallies. He's really good at speaking off the cuff and getting people excited, but he's also really good at putting his finger to the wind and figuring out, okay, what do people think about this? Oh, people don't like high drug prices, so maybe I should, be on board with that. So, I don't frankly think he's committed ideologically one way or the other. He's committed to what works politically. And I think right now, and given his track record, he has promoted actions that would lower drug prices that traditionally have not been part of the Republican playbook. So politically, I kind of see that as a draw. But I think that might mean you'll e either way, whether it's Biden or Trump in the White House in 2025, you could see more of the same related to drug prices.
Think you're right about Trump having really kind of preternatural abilities to sort of figure out what's going to play well out there. It'd be interesting your thoughts on just projecting out a little bit as and we have to sort of wrap it up here pretty soon. But what maybe just a couple of thoughts on what healthcare will look like or be affected by under a Biden administration versus a Trump administration. What how do you see there's a fork in the road, and what do you see flowing from whether you're on the Biden fork or on the Trump fork of that road?
Yeah, it's easier to talk about Biden because he's been more specific. He's had to be. I mean, each year, each winter, presidents, no matter who they are, submit their budget request to Congress. It's a wonky thing that people like me love to read. But it basically, you hear Joe Biden say all the time, show me a man's budget and I'll show you his priorities. I mean, there's a lot of truth in that, actually. And so, Biden has submitted budgets the last 4 years that in the healthcare area do a lot to sort of build on the Affordable Care Act. So he's really interested in doing things that would expand coverage, particularly for those communities that Democrats traditionally care a lot about, minorities, transgender folks, They do a lot in the area of children through Medicaid and the CHIP program. So they're looking for ways to make expansions and strengthen the Affordable Care Act. And they've taken some actions to do that, and that would continue into a second Biden administration, should there be one. And on the area of drug prices, we talked about the insulin cap. He's going to push for that. That was part of his budget. He also wants to have a $2 cap on generic drugs in Medicare. So he's going to continue to promote things like that. And of course, he's very keen on this cancer moonshot initiative, which he started when he was vice president under Obama. But that's near and dear to him. So he's going to push for trying to figure out a way, promote cancer research. So, with regard to Trump, who the heck knows? He's gonna the only thing I could say is Trump probably will do things that support the employer-sponsored health programs that are authorized under ERISA. He did something on these low-cost temporary plans. They expanded those during his administration. Biden reversed that, got rid of those. The Democrats call them junk plans. Trump may come back and try to do something again on that. But I don't think I see it as a huge issue in this election. And I think you'll see more activity in a Biden administration on the health front than you would in a Trump administration. So that's hard to make predictions, especially about the future.
Yeah, I think that's probably, as you said, the healthcare has been sort of the Democrats' political and policy wheelhouse, and with the exception of Part D, sort of the big moves have happened under Democratic administrations historically. So it would make sense that would be the pattern going forward. Well, we're at time, as we say. I appreciate the insights, the wisdom, second generation insider lobbyist.
Despite that, we're very normal people. We have.
Yeah, did you talk about politics at with your kids at the table?
I did, but they ran away from it. They're doing very different things. So good for them.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Paul. We'll be in touch.
Thank you, Peter. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this month's episode of MHE's DC Roundtable podcast series. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts, and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit us at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.